Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Susanna Constantine, and this is My Wardrobe Malfunction, the podcast about our unique relationship with the items we wear and so much else besides. We've been away for the summer, and we're back with season bloody 8, and we've got 8 more fabulous guests for you to enjoy. If you've joined us before, it's lovely to have you with us. If you're a complete newbie, hello and welcome. You've got 56 episodes to catch up on, with everyone from Elizabeth Hurley and Nile Rodgers to Dame Jacqueline Wilson and the Reverend Richard Coles. In every episode, I ask them to reveal their comfort blanket, their birthday suit, and of course their most memorable wardrobe malfunction. And we've had some absolute corkers so far. At the end of the episode, we've got some exciting news about our first ever live show, so hang on until then for more. But on to today's special guest, a comedian, presenter, actor, and now author with her first novel, The Best Things. It's Mel Gedroych. I've always adored Mel and Sue, but never really got to know them, so it was wonderful to sit down over Zoom and talk a bit of sense, and a fair amount of nonsense. So, let's grab the handles, open my wardrobe doors, and find out what's inside. So, everybody, how are you today? I am going to be talking to someone. Let me see if you can guess who this person is. So, this person has just fallen asleep in the garden on her sun lounger.
It's a red sun lounger.
So you would think it would be someone who's maybe about 78 years old, who's been in the garden, done a bit of weeding and has a cup of tea and has fallen asleep with her face planted in the newspaper. But actually, it's comedian, actress, presenter, one half of a legendary TV duo, it's not Trini, and now novelist, Mel Gedroych. Is that how I say it? Gedroych.
Do you know, that was absolutely bang on, Susan. That was bang on. And can I just say, I love the idea of being 78 and having my face planted in a newspaper, mm-hmm. and possibly with a trug in one hand and a kneeler, a gardening kneeler, because we all love a kneeler. Let's be honest, we do.
We do.
And slumped over some potentillas or something like that, or a rhododendron bush. Just slumped.
Slumped.
I would say having had a few sherries at 4 in the afternoon. Oh, I hope the future pans out like
that.
Wouldn't
that be perfect? I mean, sherry is such a thing. I remember one of the kind of long-abiding memories, nostalgic memories, is the smell of sherry on my grandmother's breath. She was a raging alcoholic, and I remember that smell so well.
Do you know, I totally know that smell, and I've suddenly remembered, because you'd think sherry, bit whatever. I had the most incredible sherry at a wedding in Spain. It was beautiful, right in the south of Spain and in sherry country, and they did them with blocks of ice, and it made total sense. Why do we not do that? We're so lame in GB with not with everything, but with, you know, why do we have warm sherry out of a sort of tweed decanter with sort of musk and moss?
Yeah, and those kind of like little vase-shaped glasses, you know, that you get, like a stirrup cup or whatever it is.
A stirrup, which sounds gynecological.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Stirrup. Get your feet in the stirrups. I've been so looking forward to this interview. Because I feel we've probably got quite a lot in common in terms of being a duo, although you're still going and Trini and I aren't. A duo, writing, you've now turned novelist, and which is so fantastic. But, you know, if I wind the movie back a little bit, I'm fascinated by your father because I'm obsessed with Siberia, for a start.
Oh,
and so, Siberia during that time, during the war and everything.
Oh,
and your
God.
Late father came to the UK when he was 17 years old, isn't that right? And then, but he'd been in Siberia, so tell me more.
So, geographically speaking, he was born in possibly one of the worst areas to be at that time. It was then Eastern Poland, but it's now part of Belarus, I think. So you had the Germans coming from one side and you had the Russians coming from the other, and they were stuck right in the middle, basically. So Germany declared war, they invaded Poland, and rather than getting the hell out, as a lot of people were and actually had been doing for the year or year, maybe even longer running up to that, in that part of the world, my granddad, Tadeusz, who I'm slightly obsessed with, and I'm not really into psychics. I don't really sort of buy into all that. I don't know about you, Susanna. I find it, I don't know, a bit creepy. I don't know. I sort of think, live your life.
I want to believe in it, but I don't. But keep going.
Well, I really don't believe in it until I met a psychic who just said, I'm sorry, I've got to talk to you right away. Your granddad, Tadeusz, is around you all the time. And I was like, right, okay, tell me more. This was a long time. This was kind of before, no, not before the internet, obviously, but it was before sort of mass social media and, you know, information zinging around. It's probably in the sort of early 90s or something. So I don't think she could have found anything online, and she just described him absolutely to the nth degree. It was really weird. And he had a weird thing. He hated his daughters wearing makeup and nail varnish because he was sort of a very proud man. You know, this is the 20s, 30s, and he just really hated that. And she said, he's coming through very strongly saying he hates the way you dye your hair. And I just thought, oh, wow, okay, that's good to know. I'll rethink those foiled highlights next time I go into the hairdresser. Maybe I'll go for a balayage, who knows?
Yeah.
But I just thought to know that sort of detail just was really, really strange. And I sort of,
Do you find it creepy or did you find it comforting or fascinating?
Bit of both, actually.
Yeah.
Bit creeps and a bit comfort. Creepy comfort. Yeah. But anyway, I'm sorry to digress. So yes, Tadeusz, my granddad, who is apparently around a lot.
Hi, granddad.
Thanks a lot. He won't approve of your hair either, Susanna. I'm terribly sorry to
say. Excuse me, I am a natural fucking blonde. Obviously not.
He might have a few words to say.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, so while everyone else was kind of getting the hell out of Dodge, Tadeusz, very proud guy, he was a sort of, he was a judge and a landowner and all, you know, all this sort of thing, quite establishment, I suppose, although quite radical, but that's another story, didn't go, said, no, we're staying. We are staying here. This is where we are. This is our place. This is our home. And of course, the Russians literally drove a tank up the drive and onto the front lawn, took him away. And that was pretty much the last time my dad ever saw him, although he saw him waving out of a prison window a month down the line. That was it. Unbelievable.
So what happened to your father?
So my dad was 11. I'm getting goosebumps talking about Tadeusz. I'm getting the bumps. He's around. Creepy comfort. Creepy comfort. Yes. So my dad was 10/11. He was 11, actually, when war broke out. And with his mum and his two sisters, they were deported. Not immediately. Some very amazing and brave villagers sort of hid them for a month or two, and they passed round the area, sort of being hidden, because they were total sort of persona non grata, because they were part of the bourgeoisie. You know, they owned land, and the Russians obviously declared them enemies of the people. So they were sent, they were deported to die, basically. They didn't go to the gulag, but they were effectively rounded up, put into cattle trucks and sent east. to fend for themselves. I mean, this was the great plan. You know, this was Stalin's great plan, that you go there to toil and die, essentially. You know, and you sort of think an 11-year-old boy with a 17 and 18-year-old sisters and mum, probably their chances aren't going to be that great. But unbelievably, you know, and there are many survivors that came out of Siberia. There are many, many that didn't, but they did, you know, quite extraordinary, really. My grandmother, Tadeusz's wife, was very, very hardcore strong, totally strong woman. She was, yeah, really something else, actually, and she sort of kept them all going, I think, by sheer force of will. And amazing, really.
Amazing. Yeah. Have you done that show? Have you done Who Do You Think You Are?
Do you know what? The very first series of that show that there ever was, they rang me and they said, would you be up for doing this? And I said, absolutely, yeah, love to. This sounds really interesting. And they said, tell us a bit about your dad's side. And I, as I've done to you, Susanna, I do apologise. I blethered on to them on the phone for about an hour and a half. And they said, yeah, we'll get back to you. And they said no, because we knew too much. The whole point of that show, okay. I think, is it's that brilliant thing where, you know, people go on the show and they discover that extraordinary secret that they didn't know about, that's unlocked, you know. But my dad wrote a lot about his past and his family and his genealogy. So I think they kind of felt there's not a lot to discover. So I didn't do it. I've never done it. So have you done it?
No, we were asked, I think, first or second season. And Trini and I were going to do it together, but our backgrounds weren't interesting enough.
That's just never true, though. I'm sorry. That is never the case. You always find something. You know, I love that show. I watch it a lot. And there's
me too.
Occasionally you start watching it and you think, this isn't the most scintillating episode I've seen. And then suddenly something happens and you're completely sort of gripped. I don't know that. I'm trying to think who that's happened with, but it's happened a few times. Yeah, it is amazing.
It's a genius format. So clever. And your dad, so he came to the UK.
Yeah, and age 17,
went on to have, how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I'm the youngest of four. So, he met my mum fashion-wise, in London in the late 40s, early 50s. Can you just imagine? I love to be sort of teleported back there and just wander the streets. It would be fascinating. And to see how women did with nothing, you know, to see how glamorous and amazing, and they had absolutely bugger all, most of them, didn't they, post-war?
But it's so interesting that time, because it's like women really had, you know, we talk about female emancipation and la la la, which really came about with the pill. But you look at you know, at that time, they were allowed to really, not so much wear their sexuality, but wear their feminism on that. You know, they were so glamorous and so womanly, whereas a man, they only had their suit. They had, whatever their age, they had to dress like their dads. And, you know, everyone bangs on about women were trod on, which we, you know, we have been and we were, and it's, you know, the change is needed. But I think also for men, you know, men had it very tough as well, and then it wasn't until the 60s and the pill when they were allowed to kind of express their womanly side almost with their long hair and their you know, flouncy shirts. And
yes, I think I love I've got two teenage daughters, 19 and 17, and I really love their this is gonna sound really creepy but I really love their male friends. The boys, they're so, I don't know, they're doing the whole long hair again, and totally borrowing each other's clothes. It's all gone, you know, it's fluid, and I think it's really interesting at the moment, actually. I don't want to sound shallow, but I love the way that, I love their style, actually. They look great, a lot of them, not all of them. But
you're so, that's such an interesting point, because you think about the kind of 60s and 70s, there was that fluidity there. If you look at sort of Bowie and Mark Bolan. It has been there. It has existed. And then it all went kind of very big shoulders, Margaret Thatcher, la, 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 la.
Yeah.
And now we're kind of fighting for that. We're fighting to, you know, to be fluid and not worry about gender. And
yes.
But it was so natural in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, I'm always amazed. I mean, I'm obsessed with Bowie, really deeply obsessed. And I always love looking at the pictures of him in sort of Ziggy, you know, the Ziggy era, sort of 71, 70, 71, 72. And how extraordinary he looked against the background. So there's lots of lovely pictures of him sort of walking in the streets with Mick Ronson, who is his amazing guitarist, and how grey and still how post-war early 70s London looks and how drab everyone looks. And then there's this kind of, there's this alien, there's this Martian in the form of Bowie sort of striding down the street with bright red hair, nothing on but red dungarees, you know, nothing underneath, huge platform boots, fag on, huge amounts of makeup. And you just think, oh my God, to have been there and seen that in that sort of drabness and to have had that sort of shining brightness must have been truly mind-blowing. Oh.
But also you had at that time, you know, with, you're so right with how everything, the background was so drab. And so
yeah,
you were able to stand out if you had the balls to do it. You were able to do that. But today it's like, how can you stand out? How do you stand out today, Sartorially?
I don't know. Well, it's weird, isn't it? Because you look at the hipsters. I mean, I live in Ealing, for Pete's sake. There's not a hipster for a nine mile radius, you know.
Certainly not in your garden, your bag, and on your sun lounger.
But I have been to hipster territory. I went to Shoreditch once. No, but you look at those guys, you know, who've got the sort of the twirly moustaches and the short crop trousers and the beards and the sort of tweed jackets and smoking the pipes. In a way, it seems like the way to stand out is sort of to go ultra, ultra square and Victorian, because to me, they look like comedy Victorian portraits, those guys. Do you know what I mean? It's quite funny.
Yeah, it's so true.
I mean, everyone wears sequins now, don't they? Everyone wears pale blue eyeshadow. Everyone wears, you know, zany leggings and bright trainers. You can't do it that way. You've got to sort of almost go the other way.
Yeah, and become drab like the background in the 1970s.
Yeah.
But when you were growing up, you were the youngest. So were you kind of, your clothing, was it sort of based on, your wardrobe, was it based on hand-me-downs or were you
solid.
Ever able... Oh, okay.
Solid hand-me-downs. Can I just say, Susanna, I'll get this off my chest. There is only one photograph of me, I think in the 70s and also 80s. There's one photograph.
Am I hearing a bit of resentment there?
Mum and Dad were so tired and probably the bank account was so depleted by the time that I came along that they were never going to waste any precious money on photographs or developing thereof. There's one photo. I looked like a boy till I was 17, pretty much. I was called Sunny solidly till I was 17. Hand-me-downs came. My godmother, my godmother's an interesting character. She'd met my mum and dad in Hong Kong. So mum and dad had a brilliant 60s, actually. They were living sort of slightly, you know, party expat life out in Hong Kong because my dad was an aeroplane designer at the time. And it was all pretty cool. The photos are great. And my God, there are hundreds of the photos. But my godmother was a sort of, a heavy smoker, you know, lots of gin and clinking ice and liquid eyeliner. And she was one of those really extraordinary characters, a little bit like she had the voice of, I think it was Jennifer from the Two Fat Ladies. Do you remember Two Fat Ladies?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
She was cut out of that cloth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sort of felt slightly, this annoyed my mum, felt a bit sorry for us. She sort of was always, Millie, what's she wearing? Oh, God, you know. So she was the main supplier of the hand-me-downs. And actually, there was some quite quality stuff in there. I don't know where they came from. Because
you were wearing your godmother's clothes when you were in your late teens?
No, she got them from somewhere. I don't know. Probably the sort of, you know, the kind of commuter belt, Surrey. set. I don't know.
Were they new or has she gone to a skip?
They were new to me, Susanna. They were new to me, and that's all that counts.
They weren't new.
But they were dresses. So my wardrobe when I was a kid, and actually my husband started howling with laughter literally the other night, because he said, I went out the other night, short t-shirt, plimsolls on my bike, and my husband was just laughing, saying, you have not changed since you were 11. And that's the truth. It was t-shirt, shorts, plimsolls for years and years and years and years. Dodgy haircut, no brace work done on the teeth. I mean, hideous sort of 70s lack of dental work teeth. And that's just what it was. That's how we all were back in the day. And it was kind of nice. You didn't have to worry about what you're going to wear. My sister, who really you should be speaking to, she's so blooming trendy and kind of elegant, and she's 5 years above me. She used to go out loads to youth club discos and stuff like that, and had arrays of clothes and shoes and makeup and stuff. I just had shorts, t-shirt, plimsolls.
But I identify so much more with you.
Oh, really?
No, I really do. And I'm wondering if we do, that's a thought, whether we do revert to our childhood, because my childhood was the same. I was only ever in jeans and t-shirts and plimsolls, or you know jodhpur boots and a pair of some breeches or something. And that is literally what I wear now, not the jodhpur boots or the breeches. But I mean, look at me. No, I'm a complete wreck. But I'm very happy with that. So I've
You're not a complete wreck at all. And can I just say, I can only see the top half of you, but I'm hoping that the bottom half has got jodhpurs and also jodhpur boots on.
It's my husband's jeans, actually.
Oh, is it? I'm wearing.
Because I didn't have any clean ones. Yeah.
Can't.
So the button does up the wrong way around, you know, so forget that. But so do you remember your first new item that you ever got?
Yep. They were a pair of Lord Antony high-waister, triple-buttoned, flared jeans. Ooh. And I'd seen them in a boutique. In fact, I'm going to say that the shop was called Boutique. Okay. I think the shop was called Boutique with T-E-E-K at the end rather than Q-U-E. Mm-hmm. In Leatherhead, which was the nearest sort of sizable town to where I grew up, I saw them in the window and absolutely fell in love. I mean, totally fell in love. They were Bowie. They were Mark Bolan. They were everything that I wanted to be. You know, they were flared, for God's sake. And I saved up and saved up. I was on 7p pocket money a week at the time. And I think these trousers were possibly $6.50 or $6.95. Yeah, they weren't cheap. And I think my lovely mum, actually, I saved up for about a year. And I think my lovely mum stepped in and said, look, you've done really well. You've saved your 7p's every week for a year. And now it's time for me to... Actually, no, hang on. If I was on 7p...
About a decade.
Yeah, my maths is so bad. Yeah, how many weeks in a year, Susanna? Is it 52?
52. Okay, so 52... I've got my calculator out.
Okay.
52. Hang on. I can barely work a calculator either. 52...
£3.64 I've got.
£3.64. Okay, so maybe your mum said match what you've saved.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if I save 364, she adds the, you know, £3.20, whatever, boom, we're in business. And I wore those jeans. I would say I wore them every day for about 7 years. I probably got them when I was 8. Oh, no, probably not 7 years, but I wore them the whole time. I was obsessed. They had that, they were that sort of brush denim. And I think they had some sort of red, like a car on them or something. You know what I mean? Like a patch? Yeah, like a patch, exactly. They had a pre-ironed patch or sewn patch on them.
So those jeans.
I was the bee's knees. I wasn't allowed a pair of kicker boots which were big. But my mum did let me get the chukka boots, which were the cheaper version of the kicker that were done by, I think, Freeman Hardy Willis.
Freeman Hardy Willis? Okay.
Yeah, I had my chukkas, the cheap version of kickers, not as good. Colours weren't as good, but anyway, I didn't complain. The Lord Antony's, and then on top, I would say probably one of my godmother's hand-me-down gin-swilling set tops. I'm going to say that. That's probably what was going on. Some weird lacy shirt with a big collar or something.
Sounds hideous.
Really bad.
But I love the sound of the jeans and the chuckers. They sound amazing.
Cheers.
But my darling, do you have a sort of look, do you think, when you were a teenager? It's like at school. Did you have a look, or was it uniform at school?
So we're heading into the 80s. I did school, sort of secondary school, 79 to 86. And, you know, back in the day, you couldn't just go into a Topshop. Mind you can't go into a Topshop now, can you?
Because it's all closed down. Yeah, I know.
But, no, you couldn't just sort of go into, you know, a high street shop and get something really groovy. I mean, I'm so jealous of my kids. They can do that, you know. High street shops were a bit drab, weren't they? And a bit expensive.
Yeah, they were.
So we had to, you know, I'm sounding like a real old biddy, but we had to create and make our own things. I wore, for a lot of the 80s, a trilby that had belonged to one of my great uncles, I think. A trilby at a jaunty angle, because Gary Newman had worn one, and I thought that's cool. I had a Mac from Oxfam. I had a plastic flower in the lapel of the Mac as a sort of corsage. And then I had this pair of jeans that I sewed to make them drain pipe. So one of them was bloody tight and then the other was slightly flapping around. You know what I'm saying?
I do. Oh, my God. I would love to see.
And a pair of, these were my absolute pride and joy. Mum bought them for me for secondary school. They were plastic, plastic moccasins with chains. They were so bad. So within about an hour, you'd be swilling around in them because your feet just got so sweaty.
Wasn't there kind of like really bad heat waves in the 80s? You'd be sticking to the pavement. You'd be stuck.
They were really bad. But I bloody love those shoes. I absolutely love those shoes. And we all used to go to this nightclub called Angles, which was quite pretty, you know, pretty goth. Very, very serious. It was underneath Millett's in the middle of Oxford where I did my teenage years. So we'd head to Angles and there'd be, I mean, people would make these extraordinary outfits for the night, you know, out of bin liners and other plastic materials. There was a lot of heavy sweating.
Heavy sweating and heavy petting. How come you went to, because you clearly super bright because you went to Cambridge, but how come you didn't go to Oxford if you were living in Oxford, or did you want to get as far away from, get away from home?
Do you know what? The honest truth is my mum bought me and one of my sisters, tickets to go and see the Cambridge Footlights, which were a sketch act. I'd never heard of them. I didn't know anything about them. I was 14 and they were playing in Oxford. And she said, because I was really massively into comedy and I loved things like Not the 9 o'clock News, The Young Ones, that kind of stuff was Alexis Sale, French and Saunders, that kind of stuff was really, really massively important for anyone of my generation, you know. And so she said, look, there's this group, they're students, they're playing. I think you might quite enjoy this. You get yourself along. So I went with my sis and I swear to God, the curtains went up and they started, and it was like a sort of it was like a sort of religious experience. I saw these students doing this really sort of, you know, what I thought, what I'm sure it was, but you know, probably now if I saw it, it might not be. But then it just seemed so avant-garde and so sort of naughty and out there and different and kind of I don't know.
Thrilling,
that's a really good word, yeah. And I sat in just literally leaning forward. My bum didn't touch the seat the whole night. I just thought, Oh my God, this is unbelievable. This is incredible. This is actually, I want to be doing what they're doing. I want to be right there doing what they're doing. So that I'm afraid is the reason that I applied.
Really? So what Cambridge. Did you read at Cambridge?
I did French and Italian. I just really loved modern languages. I think growing up with a dad who wasn't English, it made our house, you know, in Leatherhead and then in Oxford, there were always loads of people from different parts of the world passing through it. Mum and Dad were very sociable and we had a lot of Poles coming through. We had family all over the world. We had family in Argentina, in Paris, in Canada and all sorts. So it was quite a sort of very multicultural sort of vibe, I think, in the house, which was great. I don't know, I probably got it from my dad, you know. He loved languages. He spoke English so bloody well. It was ridiculous. He spoke it much better than me. Oh God, his vocabulary and his nuance, you know, his sort of turn of phrase. Really, really good linguist. I was terrible. I just didn't work at all. I got to Cambridge. I met great people and did comedy and was a hopeless student. And I never, ever would have got in these days. Back in the day, you could slip through with a bit of Billy bullshit and a bit of this and a bit of that. Not so now. So I feel lucky that I got in.
And that's where you met Sue. And
yay!
Was that kind of like, was it when you met her, was it like love at first sight? Did you get on immediately? I'm sure you've been asked this question a million times.
No, not at all. So it was a comedy night. The Footlights Society, the sketch group society, used to run these open spot nights. And I was in my second year. I'd already done a year. So I was a bit like, you know, a little bit, probably a bit pleased with myself, a bit kind of, I know what's going on here. You know, I'm not a newbie anymore. So I was at one of these open spot comedy nights, standing at the back, and there are a load of blokes coming on. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Gags about Durex, you know, gags about blah, 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 whatever. And then this figure appeared, this girl, this really short, spiky hair, and I had really short, spiky hair, and she just came on, fag on, you know, and it was off the cuff. She hadn't prepared any material. That was absolutely clear. And she just did 10 minutes about being in an all-girl college and what it was like at the bar, the college bar in an all-girl college, and it was piss funny. It was so funny. And I just thought, wow, that is so cool. So she says that I went up to her afterwards with a fag on and I had a full sort of rave outfit. Mm. Really embarrassing. It was 88. Mm-hmm. And she says I had a bandana on and a whistle. I just can't remember that, but it might be true. And and she said that I went up to her and said of something really embarrassing, like, You've got a bright future in comedy, kid, or something like that. I'm sure I did.
She was younger. Oh no, you said that to her. Oh my God, what a wanker!
Exactly. She was a year younger, and you know what that's like at uni, a year younger.
It's like a void, yeah.
It's a generation, isn't it? So yeah, I was trying to act the sort of Svengali of comedy, which I really, really wasn't at all. But I remember thinking when I spoke to Sue and when we became friends, which we did very quickly, God, it was a relief to meet a kindred spirit. You know, there were a lot of guys doing comedy at Cambridge, many of whom I adore and are great friends and all the rest of it. But oh my God, it was so brilliant to meet somebody that you could just howl with laughter. It's plain and simple, and that's kept us going for over 30 years. You know what that's like. That's those friendships that you have with girls that, and they just get it, and they get you, and you find the same things funny. And it's probably very annoying for other people actually, because there are so many in jokes. We've got so much shared experience over the last three decades that. It must be very annoying, actually. It is annoying. I know it's annoying because I've been told it's annoying by friends.
But it's so, I mean, how lucky that you met. And
I know, right?
And had that, and you're still, you have this extraordinary bond and friendship and love for each other. And
yeah, we genuinely do. We've had our ups and downs. My God, you know, life throws some really strange old goods at you, doesn't it? I love the word good. I just wanted to get that in. You know, you get knocked around and taken in different directions, and we've certainly both had that. But I think we've always managed to sort of come back and find common ground. And the older we get, actually, you know, it's going to be harder and harder to disentangle. We've admitted that to each other. So why bother?
Yeah, exactly. Why bother?
You've got someone there for life.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You had quite distinctive looks, both of you. And, I mean, was that, I imagine that for you, that was totally authentic. You're kind of the TV Mel. Is the TV Mel the same as the Mel I'm talking to now, who's wearing a sort of stripy cotton shift dress?
Deck chair. I like these colours, though.
I love the colours.
Really?
Yeah, love. Sure? Yeah.
Sure? Okay, cheers. Yeah. I got this 3 years ago from Next.
Yeah, it's nice.
Thanks. It's so easy. Yeah. It's so ruddy easy.
Yeah, it's like a pillowcase.
Exactly. Yeah. And it goes just above knee length, so it's not showing any of the slightly dodginess that's going on these days on the upper thigh area.
Not good.
So you know you're safe. Just whack it on. There you go. I would say the TV Mel and Sue looks are very much created by other people. I mean, if really? We went on, well, to a degree. And I would say they're often created by very limited budgetary work, because I can't remember what I might be talking out of my ass, but I think, for example, when we did Bake Off, I think the budget was 50 quid a show for our clothes each, something like that.
What?
Yeah, because it wasn't an entertainment show. It didn't come from the entertainment department. It came from whatever it came from. Factual? Anyway, yeah, Factual Entertainment, something like that. Small budge.
That's a teeny little budget. I mean, that is
almost
insulting because you are so, it's like you're so on show.
Yeah.
Because you've got all the cooks who are in their apron, the bakers who are in their aprons and everything.
Yeah.
And then you have the kind of wonderfully glamorous Mary Berry.
Yeah.
I
mean, her budge was pretty small as well, but her own wardrobe is elegant and wonderful.
Exactly.
I think I'm right in saying that. Certainly when the show was on BBC Two, I think when we moved to BBC One, the budget got a bit better for our wardrobe, but not terribly much, and not because I don't think it was out of any malice or any sort of feeling. It was just that's the money that was allotted for those shows because they came from that department, you know. So we had an amazing, and we still do. She's fantastic, Rachel Davis, who's a great friend and does styling for lots of people. She's brilliant. And she just, I don't know how she did it, but she just kind of made it work.
Yeah, because it's like Trini and I, we were presenting a fashion programme. I mean, it wasn't really about fashion, more about, the psychological impact
clothes have on women.
But we didn't even have a £50 budget. We had nothing. Nothing.
Are you serious?
Yeah, nothing.
But were you allowed to borrow stuff?
No, because we were we were the pariahs, because we'd be on and we had a page in the Telegraph and we'd say if we thought something was shit, we'd say it was shit. And we were just not fashionable. You know, we were not fashionable. We weren't considered to be fashionable. So no one lent us stuff. And if they had lent us stuff, Trinia could have got into the samples, but I couldn't have done. So, do you know what I mean?
But you always looked brilliant, though.
Well, we had to buy our own stuff, you know. And I think it is. It goes back to the thing of, you know, which we always said, and it's an old trope now, but if you know your shape and you show off what you like about your body, and it's how you carry, it's confidence. And I've actually noticed how much confident you seem to be in your appearance.
Well, that's very kind of you. Thanks.
You know, you carry it. It's like you wear your, which is, you know, confidence is sexy. Mm. You seem to be much more confident in yourself and in how you look.
Oh, bless you. I think that's age actually as well. I turned 53 years ago, and I just sort of, it was a bit of a landmark moment, watershed, whatever the expression is. Watermark. No, it wasn't a watermark. It was a watershed. Plimsoll line.
Plimsoll line.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just thought, look, come on. It doesn't matter what people think of you anymore. It was really, that was quite nice, actually. And I think that gives you confidence, doesn't it? If you just think, I don't mean in a sort of arrogant way, because I think arrogance is horrid and it's deeply unsexy, isn't it? Mm. Arrogance makes people look embarrassing, even if they're wearing $1 million suit or dress. It just, it just looks horrid. Ugh, if they're arrogant. But no, I think confidence, defo is a good thing to aspire to, probably. Takes a bloody while to get there, though, doesn't it?
It really does. Mm. And you can have it in some areas and not in others. But I mean, definitely. In terms of how you look too, and then obviously, as we know, we have good days and bad days. Bad days are the days that, I don't know if you're the same, but if I'm feeling shit about myself and how I look, which isn't infrequent, but then I'll make more of an effort. So you can see today I'm feeling particularly confident and peace with myself because I've made absolutely no effort whatsoever.
Yeah, great. Yeah, absolutely great. I love that. I can never wear a V-neck.
Why?
I just can't.
How big are your boobs?
Big.
Well, they exactly. Are.
No.
Okay,
no.
But why do you have it so... I mean, actually, that's a good... Just stand up. Let me see your tits. Stand up a bit.
Because this is the...
Your boobs aren't that big.
They are. And I've got a sports bra on.
Oh, I do that too,
And I've got this weird Empire Line sort of grill thing, which is part of the dress. It's really weird. Can you see that?
Yeah, it's like a radiator grill.
It's like a radiator grill.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm rocking a radiator grill today. But yes, and I'm wearing a sports bra, and I've worn this same bra. It's a Bravissimo bra, sports bra. I've worn the same bra for about 5 years because it makes me feel that it makes my boobs smaller. Just sad,
I do
it.
No, but I do exactly the same. I wear shock absorber. I run. So what I'll do is I'll wear a shock absorber. And, you know, I'm sure that's the same. And they have those seams, which aren't T-shirts. So I'll put the shock absorber on and then I'll put a slightly molded bra over the top of that.
A
nude one, and then I can wear. So I wear two bras, not just one.
God, is that?
And then
not
I can
hard?
Wear. Then I can no. Well, it does with your neck if you've got no top on, but with clothes, I put that over the top. I'm not doing it today, but that's my little tip for big boobs. Not sexy, but it makes clothes look much better.
I know this is so pathetic and first world problem, and I'm embarrassed to say it. But I'm going to say it. I've always been really jealous of women that can wear those little T-shirts with no bra on. I'd love to run down a beach, not with the kajungas kind of going, buff, 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 you know, flapping around. Just to be able to wear a singlet with no bra and just run somewhere. Oh my God. I know that is awful and I feel ashamed to say that.
Well, you know, it's not, but we all want what we don't have.
I know.
So when you feel insecure, or if you're, your self-esteem is a bit low, or you're homesick, do you have anything that's like a comfort blanket? That kind of,
yes.
It doesn't have to be something you wear. It could be a photograph. It could be anything. What do you have?
I've got this, which is, it's a blue, not the freshest. It's a blue cotton dressing gown.
Oh.
It's a beautiful cotton dressing gown. Blue stripes, very old school. So there's a navy stripe with a thin green stripe running through the navy stripe and a red stripe and a white. It's quite military, actually, slightly military. And it is indeed, it's a male dressing gown. And it came from one of my favourite catalogues ever, the James Mead catalogue. For the casual countryman.
Okay.
We started to get this catalogue coming through the door, I think something my husband bought, and we're now both absolutely obsessed with James Mead.
I'm Googling
look it
now.
Up. Hang look on, James. It up.
I think my husband, he gets stuff from there. I might, because I'm becoming more and more partial to men's clothing now. James Mead.
I tell you what, their pyjamas are sensational.
But look, okay, I'm showing Mel a picture of a lady.
Oh, is there a lady
sort of
section?
A scarf and a little cashmere cardi or something. And that could, that's how you would dress. You need to dress like that when it gets a bit colder and you fall asleep in the garden.
I didn't even know there was a James Mead lady section. We just get the bloke section. And I'm sorry to say, but hello, here's another one. I've got the medium one. My husband has the large one. We have. His and hers.
His and hers.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm nestling my face with shame into the James Mead dressing gown. But they are so comforting, and you can wear them day or night. You can wear them in bed. You can wear them when you're out of bed. They always look quite good. They make you look quite good.
Is it something, because I think when you have a dressing gown like that, that becomes it is a comfort blanket, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, do you wash it not very often because you're worried you're going to wear through it? Because I wouldn't wash it very often.
No, I mean, at the moment, I'm looking at the James Mead dressing gown and I can see toothpaste, turmeric.
Okay.
I think that's turmeric. God, that's middle class, isn't it?
Yeah, turmeric stains terribly.
Turmeric. It really does. Yeah. It really does. Something I don't quite know what that is. I'm going to gloss over that. Let's move on to another stain. I don't know.
Oh, yes.
It sounds slightly.
Are you sure toothpaste is toothpaste?
It's on the lapel, for Pete's sake.
Oh, okay. Good.
It's on the lapel.
Okay.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of stainage. Oh, there's some gardening. There's some evidence of gardening around the hem. Yeah, this hasn't been washed in, I'd say, 6 months.
Okay. That's fine. But then, okay, look, I'm going to show you this now. You could graduate to a velour bed jacket.
Yes,
I can
please.
See you in that.
Yes,
yeah, it's kind of pale blue with a little collar and a little bit of lace detail.
And
nightie. Yeah, the hairdo is great.
The hairdo is blooming. Look, it's
fabulous,
isn't
it?
Meg, isn't it? Is that candle wick, that bed jacket? I can't see the...
What do you mean candle wick?
Candle wick. Isn't that... didn't they used to make bedspreads in the 60s out of candle
wick? Yeah, it looks like it could double up as a bedspread, is the right size, in the right size.
I'm going to put money on that being candle wick. And that is fine by me because we had a lot of candle wick growing up. On various
well we did too and I used it. We had a bedspread. I had a candle wick bread spread, and now I know what it's called. And I remember I did use it as a comfort blanket, and I kind of spit on it a little bit,
suck it
to make it a bit you said something else. And then I'd rub it on my upper lip like that, rub it, so spit on it to make it even softer, and then rub it on my upper lip.
Oh,
candle whip bedspread.
I would I like getting the edges of things. So I've got the very edge of the James Mead, and I like just rubbing it against the inside of my first finger.
Again, I thought you were going to say something else. The little stiff corner on your... I like rubbing it on the inside of my little finger. Oh,
I find that really comforting. And it's when you, yeah, as you rightly say, when you wash something like this, it's actually really traumatic because you lose the smell. You need that smell, don't you? Mm. And the smell is usually probably foul to anyone else, but to you, it's just, oh, it's amazing. I love this. So I love this dressing gown. I'm going to put it on.
Okay, it's going on.
I like...
Oh, look at you.
That's quite stripy though, isn't it? We've got horizontal stripes and now verticals. Too much stripy?
No, I kind of love that.
Okay.
It's kind of good, yeah. So your novel, when did you decide you were going to write that?
Oh, about 11 years ago.
God, really? Did it take you that long?
Yeah, it did, to be fair.
Were so busy and you were dipping in and out of it?
Bit lazy as well. It took me a while. Do you know what? Going back to this whole thing about confidence as well, I think I didn't quite feel I had the confidence to do it. And then I turned 50 and I just thought, oh, God, stop wanging on about
this
novel.
You're whinging.
Exactly. And you tell all your friends, oh, I'm going to write a novel, you know, and they're sort of slightly, you know, you can see the eyelids slightly drooping as they hear this for the 100th time. But I just thought, let's do it. Let's get on with it. Life's too short. So, I suppose I was in my late 40s when I very luckily got a publishing deal, which was amazing. I got a 2-book deal to write 2 novels. So that's the first. And there will be another one.
That's so brilliant. It's called The Best Things. And is it, did you have a time, because it's the main protagonist in it, well, her family, you know, she's left with nothing. Has you had any experience like that yourself, where you've been like really insecure financially?
Totally. It's that I got the whole sort of idea, the kernel of the idea for the novel from something absolutely that happened to us in real life, which was, in a nutshell, we bought a house that was way, way, way too expensive for us and we shouldn't have ever have bought it. But we bought it because I was doing, Sue and I had a gig with Kingsmill Bread and we did their TV ads. And ludicrously, you do get paid quite a lot of money for doing ads. Mm-hmm. And I had 2 very small kids at the time, but I was like, well, it's brilliant. We've got Kingsmill. I mean, I just need to do 2 Kingsmill ads a year. And that basically, that pays for everything. We're absolutely fine. So as far as our bank were concerned, you know, I would say, well, you know, look at the Kingsmill money that we've got. We're fine, absolutely fine. So they lent us a ludicrous sum of money and we bought a ludicrous house. Well, it wasn't that ludicrous, but for us it was. The worst thing somebody said to me, oh my God, so we were like 35 or something. The worst, most crushing thing a friend said to me, they came round to this stupid house. And she walked in, she's a really good friend, and she looked at me and she went, oh, this is so grown up. Oh. And I just thought, I found that so, I just thought, God, we've made such a bloody error here, which we very much had, because I got a letter from Mr. and Mrs. Kingsmill through the letterbox out of the blue. I think we'd been in the house for about 2 years or even like 18 months, saying, thank you very much, we no longer need you and Sue for the ads. Goodbye. And it was like, oh, but that's all the money we've got. That's all the earnings we've got. It literally felt like that. It felt like being sort of slightly... And you feel so bloody stupid as well. I felt like such...
That's frightening. It's frightening.
Frightening. But I felt like a colossal goat. I mean, yeah. I rang my brother, which I often do in times of crisis. He's the eldest of us four. And he laughed quite a lot and he said, look, I could have told you that this was going to happen. And I said, mate, can you lend me 15 grand? And he said, no. So that was end of, because I thought, look, if I can just borrow a bit to kind of keep the wolf from the door. But listen, you know, this is not a kind of situation where we were going to be out on the streets, for God's sake. And I'm not in the novel trying to spin a sob story. You know, this is stupid middle class people being overly silly and aspirational and listening to wanker bankers.
And I'm sure so many, you know, so many people identify with that. Yeah. It's
stupid.
You know, I remember someone saying to me, we were doing the same with buying a house, and we knew we were going to have family, and we so overstretched ourselves.
Oh, man.
Exactly. And he said, you'll never regret it. It will always. And thankfully, actually, we didn't regret it, and we turned it around. But there's that moment.
Well, good for you, Susanna.
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
Good for bloody you.
We were much smarter and cleverer and wiser than you were. But, my love, so have you had an actual wardrobe malfunction? You must have had something hilarious happen to you.
So, yeah. The first job that Sue and I ever did that made us any money, genuinely, because we were out on the circuit and we were doing art centre gigs. We weren't cool enough even to do, you know, the kind of working men's clubs or the Comedy Store, because we weren't that kind of act. So we did art centres. And let me tell you for nothing, they are amazing. And I love art centres with all of my heart, but they don't bring in a lot of cash. So we were making ends meet. We were doing other jobs. I did a lot of bar work and waitressing, and Sue did door-to-door sales personing, which just the thought of that now makes me howl with laughter. Imagine opening the door to find Perkins there trying to sell you a Hoover. It's just...
It wasn't Anne Summers. Is that happened too?
Oh my God. Anyway, so yes, we got it was sort of 8 years after, or 7 years after we'd left uni. It was 7 years, and we got our first TV break on a show called Light Lunch that was on Channel 4.
Yes, I remember.
Just so much fun. We did it for 2 years. We couldn't quite believe that we were doing it. You know, it was one of those, it was like, what the hell? They let the kids in to have a play. You know, it literally felt like that. The adults have let the kids come in and are allowed to play. So it was amazing fun. It was great. Anyway, had a bit of cash for the first time in my life. I got a lot of stick about this from my siblings, who would sort of, you know, that thing, siblings do this really well, but they look at something that you've got in your house and they go, how much was that then? Where'd you get that from? You know what I mean? They do that sort of slightly, nice curtains, or so, you know, something like that. They didn't do that all the time. They're lovely, but there was a bit of that going on. And I don't have any dependents. I wasn't even going out with anyone. I was just totally just like, hey. And I don't know why I did this, Susanna, and God forgive me for this, but I went into Harvey Nichols, which I'd never been in before. With our agent, Sue and my agent at the time, was throwing a party, a garden party for her birthday. And I just thought, right, we're going to go in and she's going to look kind of quite cutting edge and quite groovy. And, you know, we've got this show on Channel 4. Yes, some of you might have seen it. And we're a bit risque. And, you know, anyway, blah, blah, blah. All these thoughts going through my head. I found it utterly intimidating in Harvey Nichols. I mean, I loved it, you know, from a sort of, just kind of, you know, eyes out on stalks. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. Found myself in, I think it was Jean-Paul Gaultier. I think it was in a Jean-Paul Gaultier stall or shop. And bought the most hideous item of clothing that I have ever, ever worn. And this item of clothing has gone down in the annals, particularly in the annals of Susan Perkins. Whenever she wants to just get it out and rip the piss. Sadly, I gave it away because it was so disgusting.
Please don't tell me it was the Madonna comb bra.
That would have been at least cool. It was a blazer. It was a ruddy blazer, the sort of thing that some sort of suburban boat club portly gent in his 50s would wear. It's not even a cool blazer. It was a blazer. The base colour of it, was the colour of diarrhea, and the stripe going through it was a sort of murky yellow.
Ooh.
A sort you might find in a sample bottle in a very, ooh, very old surgery. Yeah. It was absolutely, it was a shocker. And I think it cost me £200.
Oh, my God. But did you put it on when you were wearing it? Did you think, oh, my God.
I wore the blazer.
This is great.
I wore the blazer and just open laughter. Open laughter.
No, but did you think it was nice when you bought it, or was it an impulse buy?
It was an impulse buy, and I thought, and I don't think I would do this again, hopefully. I don't think I would do this ever again, but I just thought, I've got a bit of money now and I can buy something at Harvey Nichols, and oh, there's a blazer on that mannequin and I'm going to buy it. I mean, just awful. Absolutely awful. I don't like shopping very much, and I don't like shopping with other people, so I have to go on my own, which is always terrible because oftentimes I have a complete taste bypass. And on this occasion, by God, it was terrible. Okay. I looked like sort of Tim Brooke Taylor's father. It was one of the, it was just really embarrassing. I should have had a boater with it, do you know what I mean? And a sort of cravat, you know, sort of hello. Just awful. Absolutely bloody awful. It was a hot day. I was hot in the blazer. And I don't want to diss Jean-Paul Gaultier. The guy is a legend. He's a complete icon and wonderful and still is. It would have looked good on somebody else, on a rangy, edgy art student.
Mm-hmm.
Not on a normal-sized lady in her then early 30s. And I think I tried to match it with a sort of big chain. I'm now suddenly remembering. I sort of thought, yeah, let's go a little bit bling, a little bit rock and roll. It was awful.
Okay,
absolutely,
that was
awful.
A disaster. So on the flip side, do you have a birthday suit, something that you was a big success and is your go-to when you want to look fab?
It's a kind of fantasy birthday suit, actually, and I'm going to name check my daughter here because, in fact, both of them, they are so ruddy cool. They get all their stuff vintage. They go to these kilo sales. So you buy a kilo of clothes.
Brilliant.
For £10. And they go to one in Brixton, and they're all sort of over this one in the East End. And I mean, the thought of that just makes me feel really stressed, because I just think, oh, God, I'd go and just buy the most awful amount of crap. You know what I mean? And they go and they just buy really sort of... They've got the eye, Suzanne.
Yeah.
But also, they're 19 and 17, so they've got that kind of... Oh, that just lovely late teen thing going on. And in my fantasy world, it's never going to happen because I'm 53. I would show up at a party dressed head to toe from kilo sale clothes. And I would just look edgy and a little, just a bit playful. Edgy, playful, little bit hipster, little bit retro, and just cool.
Innate style, all the way
through. Innate bloody style, yeah. In fact, I've got here, so for example, I mean, this came from the kilo sale.
Then is that a shirt?
It's a shirt.
It's so nice. I love it. What material is it?
It's cotton. No, it's cotton.
That is so nice. Hold it up properly so I can see.
It's got such a brilliant shape.
I love that. That's kind of 70s. Do you think that was a bloke's?
Yeah, it's a bloke's 70s shirt.
So it's fitted.
Yeah.
Yes.
She looks... stinks of smoke. But she's got the look. If I went into a kilo sale and said, right, I'm going to buy a 1970s bloke's fitted shirt... It would just be a total freaking disaster. She sort of flounces out with this. And it
so
looks
cool.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Looks really,
is,
really good.
That
anyway.
Is deeply cool. Well, darling, I'm going to let you go back to your red lounger. And now you've got your dressing gown. All you're going to have to do is you're going to go fall back to sleep on there and then roll into bed. In your dressing gown.
But listen, and I'm so sorry I was late. I feel really, really bad about that. And it's I just fell asleep in the lounger. Oh, it's one of my favourite objects of all time, that lounger. And I just fell asleep and I thought, it's okay, I'll wake up in 20 minutes. And I'm just, apologies. So
Well, you are going to be swinging from the rafters tonight after that disco nap. So I'm very, very envious. And you have been amazing and you're wonderful. And I can't thank you enough. And it's like I do all these questions and I know that it's like I barely asked any of them, which is a sign of a good, really good interview. It's flipping great. Thank you.
Right back at you. I've absolutely loved being in your company and... Let's go to a kilo. I'd love to go to a kilo sale with
Should
you.
Should we do that? Let's do it.
Yes, please.
Let's do it. Okay,
They're intense, though. Average age, 16.
Okay, probably. That's fine. We can deal with that.
Can we?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, we can.
Let's do it.
And there's a lot, I imagine, because I've never been to one, but from the way they've been described, there's a lot. It's like car boot times square that by 75. I mean, it is intense. You have to really get in the piles of stuff, you know.
Anyway, amazing.
I'm up for it if you are.
Okay, good. All right, my darling. Well, listen, you take care. And thank you so much. All right. That's enough.
So welcome. Loads of love. Thanks a lot.
God, Mel, I bloody love you. Thank you. That was so much fun and well worth the wait. Don't forget Mel's new novel, The Best Things, is available at all good bookstores on and offline. Right, before we go, we have a bit of news. We and our house band duo are taking my ward Mel on the road, literally, to one place about 20 minutes from my house. But we are live streaming it too, so you can enjoy it from wherever you are in the world, from the comfort of your own home. It's on Sunday, the 7th of November, starting at 7:45 p.m. for those in the Yvonne Arnaud Mill studio and at 8 p.m. for those streaming. Check out our show notes and our website, mywardmel.com, for more on how to get tickets. It's going to be eventful because I promise you we have absolutely no idea what we're doing. You can also drop us a line by emailing help@mywardmel.com. Follow us at My Ward Mel, and we'd be so grateful if you'd subscribe, rate and review us on your chosen podcast platform. Oh, and you can find Duo at duoguitarmusic.com or at Duo Guitar Music on their socials. Anyway, that's it. Thanks so much again to the marvellous Mel and to Duo, and of course, thanks to you guys for listening. Catch up soon. Until then, my wardrobe is officially closed.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.